As we mentioned over the course, okay, good morning. We are election day, November 8th, 2016.
Seven people say
Tuesday. Of Mar Cheshvan. No, that won't be till January 20th. The 7th of Mar Cheshvan, Tavshin Ayin Zayin. And so we are in Halacha Day of Perek Ches. Correct? I remember Perek Ches. And Perek Ches in Shmos discusses the issue of Kinim. And we made a large point on both our first 2 days of discussing this Perek that the Chart Tumei Mitzrayim had a problem with making Kinim. What was their problem with making Kinim? So the Rashi gives the explanation that it has to do with less than a size of a barley grain, so the Chartim aren't able to do that. We point out that the Gemara itself seems to reject that. The Gemara itself at least suggests another opinion that has to do with calling things that are too small from other places, which you're not able to do. And the Ramban, however, said that no, it's not about the issue of the size of it, rather it's the issue of creation, as opposed to blood, which was changing water into blood, and frogs, which was just bringing frogs up from the river. Kinim was something that they were creating anew. And because kinim were something that was created anew, that's why the Chartumei Mitzrayim were not able to do it. It's a question of whether they were ever able to do it, or just this time they weren't able to do it. But either way, it had the distinction that the Ramban draws is between something that is being drawn from something else versus creating something anew. So this issue, although not exactly the same thing, the issue with Kinim is one of the major, major controversies, one of the major, major battlegrounds of the discussion about what the science, when the science seems to appear different than it does in the Gemara. The Gemara makes certain scientific claims, and modern science seems to disprove those claims that are mentioned in the Gemara. And then what halachic ramifications should come about from that? Is there a Mishnah Berurah in this room? Yeah, Mishnah Berurah Chelek Gimel, please. So,
what kind of scientific claims to the science?
I'll mention a second. Oh, I get all six volumes.
Drew.
Okay, so the claim goes as follows. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Beis in Masechta Shabbos, so it discusses the issue of killing lice on Shabbos. When the lice in the hair, you let to kill the lice. So the Gemara comments, Mantana, Amar Rabbi Yirmi, Rabbi Elazar, He, Dathanya, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, Hahori, Kin the Bishabbos, Kahorik, Gumbel Bishabbos. The one who kills a louse on Shabbos, Zippe, kill a camel on Shabbos. Oh, I'm sorry. Before we get to that Gemara, I'll just point out one other claim, and that is a pasuk that appears in the end of Parshas Shmini, that in Perek Yud Aleph of Pasuk of Vayikra, Pasuk Mem Dalet, so the very end of Shmini, it makes the following. The pasuk says, "Ki ani Hashem Elokechem Yiskachi Yisim Kedoshim Ki Kadosh Ani Lo Sitamu Es Nafsho Seichem." You will not contaminate yourself. B'chol Hasheretz Haumesa Ala Aretz, with all anything that is teeming that creeps on the earth. So the Sforno makes a comment on that. The Sifri is one of the Midrashim, makes a comment on that. What makes these animals distinguished from other types of animals? He says, oh, those animals, those are not reproduced, but rather those spontaneously generate. So even those animals that are spontaneously generated, so those things are going to be prohibited as well. So Sam is looking at me, I think, through his shaded eyes, saying, huh, spontaneously generated? So at what point did the idea of spontaneous generation become debunked? What century?
Well, it's basically...
I don't want to hear basically. Just give me a century. Fourth,
18th century.
Yeah.
With Pasteur.
Right. 18th, 17th. With Pasteur, was 19th century already? I think in 18th century already they were discussing.
Yeah, there was
already a debunk of the spontaneous generation concept.
Yeah.
But that was assumed for many, many years. So what does that mean? That means that during the time of the Gemara, they were going under the assumption that there are certain things that are spontaneously generated. The Gemara seems to assume that. The Rambam seems to assume that. Aristotle seems to assume that. The whole world seems to assume that things were spontaneously generated. So this pasuk is coming to tell you, even things that are spontaneously generated are going to be usher to eat as well. Okay? comes the Gemara. So, all right, how do we understand that now? The truth is that's not that big of a deal. Meaning, it's not changing any halacha. The halacha is that these things are usher, whether they're spontaneously generated or whether they're not. They're still going to be usher.
That was descriptive.
But are there sometimes ways that one can that this would actually have a halachic ramification? So yes, there's a big one, and that is the lice showing up in the Sefer Shabbos Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. So who is the Tana who says? So he said, Rebbe Eliezer, the Tana Rebbe Eliezer, Omer Hahori Kina B'Shabbos, Kahori Gal B'Shabbos. The one who kills a kina, a louse on Shabbos, it's as if you have killed a camel. So the Gemara asks, Maskif l'Rav Yosef ad kam l'pligu Rabbana led Rabbi Eliezer el b'kina. That maybe the rabbis disagree with Rabbi Eliezer when it comes to kina, the ina paro v'rava, which don't reproduce. Aval shar shkatzim v'ramashim tafarim v'rabim lo pligi. When it comes to other shkatzim v'ramashim, other types of vermin and crawling things that do reproduce, the Rabbana don't argue. But what is that Gemara telling us? That the Rabbana argue on Rabbi Eliezer when it comes to certain things that don't reproduce and rather are spontaneously generated. What specifically are they talking about? They're talking about lice. Lice are permitted to kill on Shabbos because they spontaneously generate and don't come from a mother and a father. That is what the Gemara tells us. So, okay. Not only are we passing a halacha based on science that seems to have been debunked, we are also paskining a halacha lekula. You get a double whammy here. Not just a psak halacha where you say, alright, well, we'll just be concerned about this situation and we'll see machmir. Here you're actually being makel. Is this halacha quoted? Yes, this halacha is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Thank you, Sam, for providing that source for me. Shin Tes Zion Sif. Shin Tes Bav. Shin Tes Zion Sif. Go. Oh yeah, everything's off. This is the standard page. So I was looking for a spot on the page. It's not there. It's a different part of the page. But it tells us Shinta Zayin Sif Tes Paros Hanikra Borgos Beloshen Arev Asul Sodo Elim Kain Hu Al Besarov Oksov Asul Laharka. Okay, so a certain type of thing you're not allowed to kill. Aval Kina Mutter Laharka. When it comes to a Kina, so that is permissible to kill. Comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, why is that? Why is the kina different? And the Mishnah Berurah explains because that doesn't because it's spontaneously generated. About paros, afal pishigam he ain't a par v'rav. I'm sorry. Ma ilim adam is a par v'rav. I'm afkosh from v'rav. Fuke kina the ain't above yizachar v'nekev. As opposed to a kina which doesn't come from a male or female, ela b'min hazaya. Rather, comes from the sweat. Lo chashiva beria. It's not considered a being, and therefore there is nothing wrong with killing it. About paros is a different. I think that's some kind of mouse that was also assumed to be come from the mud, but that's like other mice. So therefore it is a problem. But the Mishnah Berurah is still passing along. Lice you're permitted to kill on Shabbos. Now the Mishnah Berurah is not in the Dark Ages. The Mishnah Berurah wrote the Mishnah Berurah in the 1890s. So certainly he knew that the whole idea of spontaneous generation has been debunked, but yet he passed it that way anyways. If one looks in the modern Hilchos Shabbos book, so I took out today a Rabbi Ribiat book, one of the 39 Malachos, you open it up to a section on the Malach of Shechita, so he talks about the lice, and he says it continues to pass. Yeah, mutter to kill a lice on Shabbos, and he doesn't tell you why, but if you look in the back of the book, it just quotes the standard sources. Gemara, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, and therefore he assumes that it is okay. So why should it be okay? Why should, based on what we know now, why would a louse be different from any other type of animal? If you're not allowed to kill a fly, you should also not be allowed to kill a lice, but rather we seem to assume that it is okay. So we'll give a couple of approaches to this issue. If one wants to read this in depth, at least from the rationalist perspective, the last chapter of Nussan Slifkin's book, Sacred Monsters, is entitled The Spontaneous Sweat Louse, which is of course distinguished from the previous chapter, which is entitled The Marvelous Mud Mouse. But he discusses he discusses over this book many of the different animals that seem to show up mostly over the course of the Gemara. You can look on the back for the topics: unicorns, dragons, mermaids, two-headed men, werewolves, giants, dwarfs, salamanders, the phoenix, sea serpents, griffins, leviathans, behemoths, shamir, rock, and spontaneous generation. All those are discussed various chapters in this book. Excellent resource, Sacred Monsters, although it doesn't come without its controversy. This is Rinalda Slifkin himself went through a major, major controversy about 10 years ago, to which he has not yet recovered, because this somewhat flies in the face of the, as we'll see, of what some positions are on these types of things.
What's his name?
Natan Slifkin.
Uh-huh.
Slifkin, yes. And not everything I'm quoting is from this chapter. When I went around, I want to try to kind of give a balance here of what the different people assume. In this situation, this was already afterwards. This is already. He grew up. I don't really know the whole story. He grew up more in the Hasidic, not the Hasidic world, in the Haredi world. Studied in Haredi yeshivas. Always said, I know somebody who knew him as a young, like in yeshiva. He said this guy was just fascinated with nature. He'd go out on walks and he'd know about all the animals. He wrote a couple of books early on that were accepted in the world. I think The Camel, the Hare, and the Hyrax, I think, is one of his early books, and he wrote one or two books that then got him into trouble when he started claiming that they got the science wrong. That once you enter into the realm that the Talmud and that the Rishonim, they didn't really understand the science, they got it wrong, so that gets you into trouble. So that got him into trouble. And that led to a long disputation. He's pretty much just gone out on his own now and doesn't really, he says what he says and they say what they say and they move on. So as we continue... What happened to him? Okay, we're continuing on. So, so how does one deal with this this issue? So, approach number one is he quotes here from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I wasn't able to find it inside. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in these matters, I'm not coming in any way to denigrate Chabad, but like it or not, it's just a fact, he takes non-rationalistic approaches to many of these issues. So in terms of the age of the universe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe held that it's 5,777 years old, and you want to bring some kind of scientific proof against it, sorry, the Torah is right and the science is wrong, and that there's nothing to discuss. No, am I presenting it honestly?
Yeah, I mean, all I know is quite a few books that got them in there. The question book by Russian scientists called Mind Over Matter, and they pull out a letter the Rebbe wrote some high college student about the evolution.
Yeah.
That is classic.
Okay, I see it's quoted here. Mind Over Matter, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not crazy. Okay, good. So and I got from that, and I'm not an expert. There's two things pulled out. Number one, in science, we don't see it physically. We have extrapolation, interpolation.
Okay.
You extrapolate, you go beyond what you know, it's okay. But
okay.
His example this.
Yeah,
is water. He says water freezing. If you took water freezing and you studied it, you would extrapolate it. Nothing happens above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, centigrade, and nothing would happen below. But suddenly it freezes, and that's what people are doing when they extrapolate science, what they see, and that's how it started, and they extrapolate that, whatever.
Right, it's all based on extrapolation. So the way so science is never actually proven right. By definition, you can't actually prove anything. You could just make strong assumptions about things.
And what science is doing, they're extrapolating.
And the Torah...
Assuming there's no radical changes.
Okay, and the Torah... And the Torah says what the Torah says, and the Torah is 100% right, and science is only assumed to be right. Okay, so the way that when he quotes, okay, all right, what he quotes for this situation, with regards to the eggs, is that the same thing with these eggs. Meaning the Gemara says that that these eggs are spontaneously generated. So you say through experimentation, you see that lice isn't spontaneously generated, but rather it comes from mother and father. Okay, but you have no way of proving that those lice are not spontaneously generated. I mean, you can't prove that something doesn't happen. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, and therefore you can still assume that the Gemara was correct. That is a seems to be an approach that that is consistent with many presentations that I've seen of Menachem Mendel Schneerson's approach on these matters. Okay.
Some lice are generated, and some lice come from eggs.
Now the claim is that maybe that we see nowadays lice comes from eggs, but who says that's 100% the case? I mean, that lice that you saw came from an egg. It doesn't mean that lice that you see crawling around necessarily came the same way. That might have been spontaneously generated, right? Now the problem with that, and the problem with giving these types of things, to make a distinction of saying, oh, well, that's about the time of the Gemara, but nowadays it's different, or that's talking about one specific type of lice, but we're talking about a different type of lice. So that's a bit problematic, because the Gemara never gives you that type of warning. The Gemara never said, if that was the case, you would expect the Gemara to say something like, even though there is some lice that spontaneously generate in theory on a level the Raisi, you should be able to kill them on Shabbos, because we're concerned that maybe you're not getting the right type of lice, so therefore we're going to prohibit killing lice on Shabbos. That's a standard Talmudic argument, which we don't see in this case. Here, all we see is that lice are permitted to kill on Shabbos, and there's no concern that maybe you're going to kill a lice that actually came from the mother and father. So, for instance, what would the psak be if you actually saw an egg hatch of lice, and now the lice is crawling around the hair? Are you permitted to kill it on Shabbos? So, according to some of these posting, the answer would be no. But according to, I think, the standard explanation, we don't see that distinction in the Shulchan Aruch, we don't see that distinction in the Mishnah Berurah. I think most would assume that you are allowed to kill it on Shabbos, despite the fact that you saw that you know for a fact that it came from a laid egg. Okay, so another way of dealing with this.
We don't know that it was a laid egg. You know that it was from Kuda.
Well, you could track it. You could track the laid egg.
Then you'd have to see the parents.
Okay. All right. I hear. But you get the point. Meaning it is conceivable that one would come up with that. Is that considered a different barrier? Is it not a different creation? Or is it not considered a different creation? We assume that it is not considered a separate creation. So once one accepts that, so the question then is, okay, so should we change the halakha? I mean, once we accept that, that lice do come from mother and father and are not spontaneously generated and in fact are not different than birds that come from an egg. So should we now say, well, the halacha should be different? Either Mishnah Berurah didn't pass in that way. Should maybe we pass in that way? So he quotes here in a footnote that is quoted. I don't have a way of finding this inside. That Rav Yashiv paskened yes. Rav Yashiv is quoted in a few places as saying, yeah, because we now know what we know about lice, we're now going to be machmir and say you're not allowed to kill them on Shabbos. Now you get to an interesting dynamic here, because generally the Rav Yashiv is the same one who put Nassim Slifkin Chirim. I mean, generally, the way that the camps line up is the more quote-unquote Machmir camp is generally also the ones that deny the science, that deny the application of science, while the ones that are ready to accept the more rationalistic approach are usually in the more Makil camp. That's usually the way the parties break down. But in this case, all of a sudden you have a cross. If you're going to accept science, that's going to end up being right. Machmir. If you're going to reject science and say, no, the Shulchan Aruch is right and the Gemara is right and all scientists are wrong, so you're going to end up being more makil in this situation. So you have an interesting little bit of a cross here, which is what makes this particular sugya in the whole realm of science versus Talmud perhaps the most fascinating, because you end up, if you accept the science, you end up having to be Machmir, and if you don't accept the science, you end up having, then that's when you have the right to be Megill. But is there a way to do both? Is there a way to have your cake and eat it too? To A, accept the science, and B, to also say, we're going to maintain the halacha as it appears in Gemara Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah and Rabbi Ribiat's 39 Malacha's book. So there is already, this was brought up in the 1700s by someone named the Pachad Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak actually is on the list of... Pachad Yitzchak is interesting. He wrote a... please mute, Tamir.
Try not to hear two people.
Oh, now we have two. Oh, there's two people on.
I think it's coming for me. Mine's on here.
All right. Well, person number two who's listening in, we hear you. Please mute. Okay. Lower the volume. Yeah. Okay. So, if you, with that in mind, well, now, so Pachad Yitzchak is interesting. Pachad Yitzchak wrote a, I have it in the library over here, he wrote a encyclopedia of all halakhic topics. He just printed, you know, a list of halakhic topics, and this is all we know from the Gemara and Rishonim on each of these topics, which is pretty amazing to do before the time of computers and before the time of, like, legible type. This is in the 1700s.
So there was.
I understand there was type, but try reading a book from the 1700s. Right? It's not so easy to lean back on your couch and just read it. The font, right? I mean, I'm in awe. You open up a Tor Beis Yosef before the new edition. I don't know how people learned it 50 years ago. It's very difficult. So anyways,
I can't read before you change it either.
Okay, so anyway, so he printed the sefer, and he suggested that as a matter of a policy, that maybe we should be machmir on this topic. He suggests that maybe the halakha should switch because we are concerned about that. There is, however, a fascinating essay that appears in Rav Dessler's, in the Michtam Eliyahu. The Michtam Eliyahu are the writings of Rav Dessler, or the writings of his student, Rav Aryeh Carmel, who edited the volume. So it's the Michtam Eliyahu is certainly well within the Haredi world, and he suggests the following idea, that once the halacha, that there, one has to distinguish between the halacha and the reason. And he says, the halacha, we have a mesorah on the halacha. What the reason perhaps is subject to change. And he has a few few examples here of where the halacha seems to, they base the halacha on a certain thing, which was then proved to be not true. So one example, the third example is this one, which he says is the hardest one to explain. But one example that he gives is with regard, there's a halacha that water that's used for matzah has to be left overnight. It's called mayim shaladim. That's a halacha, water has to be left overnight. Why does water have to be left overnight? Because it has to be room temperature, because if the water is considered too hot, so the water will cause the flour to become chametz faster. So that's why if you go to a matzah bakery, you'll see there's a, they have two rooms. One room is the flour room, and one room is the water room, and the water is left in buckets. They don't just take water out of a sink. The water is left overnight to become room temperature. So where otherwise would they be getting the water from? If you're not getting the water left overnight, the water would come from the ground.
So
the water would be warmer.
What?
The water would be warmer if it came from the ground. Why would the water become warmer if it came from the ground? So the reason the Gemara gives is because the sun travels under the earth overnight, and then it comes up the other side. So the sun travels under the earth, and therefore heats up the water. And that's why if you take water in the morning from underground, it will be warmer than water that was left above ground.
Really?
So
you're right. We don't believe that.
So it's a little problematic. In fact, the travels of the sun was disproved in the Gemara itself, I believe. The Gemara itself talks about the sun traveling around in the Gemara. There says, I think that's where the Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda says, he gave in to the philosophers and he realized they were right and he was wrong. That's another one of the famous Gemaras in this sugya. But yet the halacha still stands. Why does the halacha still stand?
Right.
So one can also realize that the reason that water that comes from the ground might be warmer than water that was left above, realize this is, you know, early March, or this could be in March, is that the water above is by the air, while the water below ground is still maintaining temperature from the daytime. That's why often water temperature in the morning is warmer than it is in, I forget how it works, but the water takes longer to transfer. The further the water is from the surface, the longer it will take to change temperatures. So the water above ground in the morning might end up being cooler than the water that's below ground in the morning, and that's why the water has to be left above ground. But anyways, it seems to be a conflict in terms of the reason, but the halacha is still going to stand. How does one work it out with regards to the louse? So he says it is problematic. And perhaps one can say that while it's true that the louse comes from an egg, lice do comes from eggs, the eggs are considered microscopic, and therefore don't qualify as being eggs. Even though scientifically they do, halakhically we don't recognize them as eggs. Now it's a bit problematic because we do recognize lice eggs. They are big enough, one could see them. We went through this in our house with one of our children a couple of years ago. You certainly can see them if you look really carefully. And they are considered large enough that they would be considered problematic in terms of infestations to lime and things of that nature. But perhaps you mix it together with some of the other leniencies that are suggested. And one of them is that if something can't survive outside of here, maybe it's not considered as if it's really living. That suggestion is out there. So you combine it with some of the other things that come up, so maybe that is sufficient to get around the scientific problem, meaning the halacha will still stand. The literal explanation of the science does not stand. Perhaps there are other reasons to support the halacha, but the halacha is what we have the Masorah on. The halacha was that lice are permitted to be eaten on, lice are permitted to be killed on Shabbos. And even though the reason may change, one has the, we would still support that. We would still support that halacha. Now, I'm a little bothered by that, because it's not generally the way we learn halacha. Halacha is generally decided by principles, not decided by particular objects or particular creatures. So that at least is one would have to say this is kind of an exception to that rule that we say lice is just that's the din. The halacha is of lice is that's halacha regardless of what the reason is. He has another idea here, which in some ways is a more firm idea, in some ways is a less firm idea, and that is that we accept mistakes. Is that once the halacha is decided, we accept it. I mean, that's it. The halacha was koveya, despite the fact that the science was changed. Or wasn't changed. Despite the fact that it doesn't necessarily line up with the science.
Right.
That the science, I mean, one of the claims out there is that, well, it's just different. That then, you know, that those days it was spontaneous generation, nowadays it's not. That's a little difficult to accept. But you could just say that the halacha was decided, and we're not just simply going to change something because it doesn't necessarily correspond to the science. The halacha is the halacha, despite the fact that maybe it comes out a little bit wrong. And he suggests a couple of interesting proofs to that, although I see we're running out of time. One of the proofs is the famous Gemara of the Tanur Shalachnai, where Rabbi Elazar was having the fight with the Chachamim about a certain topic. Rabbi Elazar said that if the halacha is like me, the walls of the Beis Medrash should fall in, and they fell in. And the Chacham said, "Oh, go back to your place. You don't decide halacha is based on the walls of the Beis Medrash." And he said, "The water is going to flow backwards." And the Chacham said, "We don't pass in shaylos based on which way the waters flow." And then finally, he said, "If a baskel comes out like me, so then the halacha is going to be like me." And the baskel came out, but the others right. The Chacham said, "Lo b'shamayim." Right? We don't paskin like shamayim. Rather, the halacha is like us. So perhaps the meaning of that Gemara, and he quotes from Rav Herzog, that Rav Herzog suggested that approach, is that, yeah, we accept the possibility that there could be mistakes, but yet we're going to paskin that way anyways. That's the way, once halacha was koveya, it's not going to change. He quotes an interest, there is an essay which koveya established. Once it was established, we're not going to change it. He quotes a fascinating essay from Shlomo Fisher, which I somehow dug up on my own years ago for a shiur that I gave in shul. And I don't think I'd ever seen it quoted by anybody else. But he quoted it. I'm happy to dig it up, and all my underlines are still intact. And that is the issue of later authorities arguing on early authorities. Right? One of the rules, the way Gemara works is that you have Tanayim, you have Amorai, you have the Mishnahs and Braises, then you have the Gemara, and you can't have an Amora that's unsupported by a Tana.
Right?
So why not? Why not? Why can't you? So we don't really have the time to really get into it fully, but the way Rav Fisher explains it is that that was just the rules as they accepted it. They accepted that that was going to be the rule. We might argue on what the Tana said. We might think that they're wrong. So sorry, that's against the rules. The rules are the rules, and the rules are that after the Tanayim, Amarim don't argue on Tanayim, Rishonim don't argue on Amorayim, and so on and so forth. As halacha continues. So, wait a second, does that mean that things are mistaken? So the answer is, maybe. Maybe that's true. That's part of the system. Part of the system is that we're willing to accept a few mistakes in order to maintain the unity of Torah at large, which is a fascinating concept. And now, where to apply that and where to not? We do. There are things that we change based on our modern day applications of science. This comes up in many, many different areas. One is an 8-month-old baby. So if one learns Gemara, if one learns through enough daf in the Gemara, there's a concept in the Gemara that a child can be born, a healthy child can be born after 7 months or after 9 months, but not after 8 months. If it's born in 8 months, it's considered like a goses. A goses means like something that's about to die and it's not going to survive. So it has been known in recent science memory to have in one or two cases of babies born in the 8th month and miraculously surviving. Right? So how could that be? It seems to go against the Gemara. So there are approaches to that, but say, well, it's really a 7-month baby that lived longer, or it's a 9-month baby that came early. There's ways of answering that question, but there are halachic ramifications. One halachic ramification is if it's born during the 8th month, you don't do a pinyon haben. Why don't you do a pinyon haben? Because it's clearly like the baby's going to die anyway soon. Is going to die soon anyways. Then there's no reason to do a pinyon haben. We'll do a pinyon haben, and we're not going to delay a pinyon haben. We'll do it. So why is that? So because we recognize that the science is either we say that we recognize that the science is a little faulty, or times have changed, or we're going to use one of these other answers. It's really a 7-month baby and not a 9-month baby, but yet we're going to paskin seemingly according to the change in the world. Right, we're going to paskin that things have changed, and we're going to change the halacha accordingly. So when do we do that, and when do we not do that? So that really has to be worked out on a case-by-case basis by people people above my pay grade to make those types of decisions. This is just an introduction to the topic. We'll come across this, I'm sure, plenty of other times together.